This is why we love racing in all its forms.
Berwinder Clare kicks. Berwinder Clare's won it for Australia. They're on top of the world.
Bling It On from Colt 31. And Bling It On. The comeback boys done it. Bling It On first.
It's still Rajasthan in front. And Rajasthan wins the Sandown Cup.
For the next hour, RSN is cracking the codes.
Hello and good morning. On a very special day, it's the 100th running of the Cox Plate. It's actually the 99th year that the race has been run because it was first run in 1922. But like the Caulfield Cup, there was one year that the race was split into two divisions, which is quite amazing to think of now. So it'll be a special day. Can't do this show without my the co-hosts. I might have opened the show today, but I probably could do the show without them, but I don't want to. Very much a part of doing this show is Simone Fisher and Matt Stewart. Good morning, guys.
Morning, Dan. Hey, Simone, it'd be a pretty crap show without you and I if it was just Dan on his own, let's face it.
Well, I think, Dan, good morning, guys. I thought he was about to say my two favourite people, and then he thought, oh, hang on a minute, I've got a wife that's probably my favourite person. I better not go that
And he's got
far,
two but, dogs as well, and a couple of daughters. So we were right down on this.
It is great every week, of course, doing it with you two. And
absolutely. My two favourite people that I work with on air, there's no doubt this is my favourite show, and I reckon if I had to guess, it would be yours, Matt, and yours too, Simone. We have a lot of fun and...
Absolutely.
Got some lovely feedback from a Cranbourne trainer this week who says they listened to it in the tower in the morning. I didn't even know there was a tower there, so I'm not sure whether she made it up or not. But this is Cindy Alderson who told us this. You might remember we had her on a few weeks ago, and she said it's such a popular show because of the hours that they work. And one of the other trainers looked at her the other day, and instead of asking about one of her horses, he said, "How's that greyhound of yours going?" So that was Lola. So that was quite lovely. Hey, I know every time we get to a major spring meeting, we say, "Wow, this is the one, and this is the with all the history and the one we look forward to." But there is a complete distinction between the Cox Plate guys and everything else because of the Coliseum, Velodrome, amphitheatre type effect and the marking points of the track and the school, you know, Mooney Ponds Primary School on Turner Street, I think it's called, and it's been a place of education, Simone, for 100 years, but it's also been where stuff gets fed in, Cox Plates as well, and that's when it's absolutely game on. So what I was going to say is we've got to cherish these memories, and we won't be able to because we won't be there today, because this place is going to be knocked down and raised and replaced and realigned and re-angled in the next couple of years. So all the stuff we know about Cox Plates and, you know, that tight first turn and the school and so on, Simone, we're not going to have it for much longer. So these memories that we're going to have to cherish, aren't we?
Sure are. But why is that, Matt? I haven't heard that. I'm not aware. Is it because it's too tight for the horses?
No, land value, massive redevelopment with housing
the
and
money.
Apartments and
money
all
talks.
Sorts of things. Money talks, yep. So it's going to change the angle. So the home straight now is on McPherson Street. The new track, the home straight, is going to be on Turner Street, which means the school, Dan, which had signified the 700-metre mark where everything gets fed in, is probably going to be at about the 250-metre mark.
Yeah.
So everything's going to change. And Caulfield too, guys. I mean, the Caulfield that we now know, that if the MRC's redevelopment plan is approved, the $300 million precinct plan to turn it into a night and day Happy Valley, then Caulfield will be unrecognisable as well. So these tracks with the red brick of Caulfield and the history of Moonee Valley, we're not going to have them for much longer. It's not to say that the future will be less or lesser, but it's just going to be different, isn't it? So enjoy it while you can.
And it becomes more precious. My involvement with horse racing was from a very tender age, as you guys would well know. And as a result of that, I think when we're looking back at Moonee Valley or knowing what's going to happen ahead, and that might also apply to Sandown and to Caulfield, it becomes more precious, those memories of growing up. And I was a young tacker, and there are certain things in your life that perhaps are more memorable, they're more vivid. And one of them, 1976 Cox Plate Day, I would have been 7 years old, and I can't vividly recall Surround winning. I knew how great Surround was, but a lot of that has come past 1976.
Was your hair thinning out then still? Or
There were some places that didn't have hair at that stage, Matt, and other places that did.
Right. But, so you reckon I'm bad, Simone? I didn't say that. He did.
There was something that happened that day.
Are we on the X-rated show? Or are we on the normal track in the case?
No, it's Cox Plate Day. Anything can happen. It's got an X in it, so, you know.
The day surround one, and the vivid part about that day, even though I was so young, was that there was a total eclipse of the sun. So I remember being at Moonee Valley and everything went dark at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It was quite extraordinary, and sometimes over a period of time, you even question yourself, did it actually happen that day? But it's actually somewhat vivid on a day that's rather vague, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, and it's... To me, it's akin to the showgrounds with the circular intimacy and all that sort of stuff. And I'm sure there are some greyhound tracks, Simone, that are more intimate than others. But do you have any jump out of your head Cox Plate memories at all? Or were you doing fashions on the field at some country meeting on most of these days?
No. And it's already been 12 months since we had this conversation. I can't believe how quickly the time's gone. But Might and Power was the one and only time I've been at the Cox Plate. But I happened to get tickets into the members' yard that day and was down on the winning post when he went across the line. But prior to that, my friend and I had gone and looked at him in the stall, and there's a lot of people hanging around. And I remember Nick Moraitis was, you know, just so generous with his time and everyone admiring this horse. So that's my one memory. But I met Bart Cummings that day as well and got his autograph. So that's my only memory, and I dare say that will be the only one, given that if the valley's changing, unless I get there in the next year or two. But it's a good memory, and look, it's one that, is unique to me.
Yeah, no, and what a great year to be there with him thundering up the straight there, Might and Power. Dan, I remember in 1989 the controversy of coal diesel, and this almost annually that this sort of controversy raises its head, because there's always seemingly a bottleneck of horses who want to get in and only a certain amount that can. And the philosophy of the committee seems to have changed a lot over the years, where they're letting a lot more in than they're rejecting. But back in 1989, coal diesel had won the Caulfield Cup and the Elders Mile, which is the Turex, so two massive handicap races at Group 1. And he'd also won a couple of Group 3s in Sydney as well on the way. So he had a very big CV going in. But Ian McEwen, who you'll remember well, was a very bombastic chief executive at Moonee Valley. And he seemed to sort of have the committee at his behest, basically. And they had a thing at the time. They knocked back Black Knight a few years earlier as well, because he was a handicapper and then went on to win the Melbourne Cup. So they didn't want a handicapper winning the Cox Plate because they deemed it too elite. And Greg Mance, who's a colourful story in himself, was very upset about it and so on. The only thing in defence of the committee was that it was a Cox Plate full of champions. So it was a bit of a logjam to get in, but bottom line is he should have gone in. But the dark irony of all this is that Greg Mance died this week, the very week of that his horse became almost the reference point to Cox Plate controversy, Dan, is the week that Greg Mance died at about the age of 74. He'd had Parkinson's for the last 10 years, and you know the story better than most. It's an extraordinary life story of Greg Mance, and it's a dark irony that he has died in Cox Plate week, isn't it?
Look, it was. He was pretty dry with his humour and the way he talked. He was rather, in a sense, reserved. But through the course of my work in my early days at Channel 10, I was able to get to know Greg pretty well. And he had properties. We had a property outside of Ballarat, but trained at Flemington.
Carngham Station. And it was an extraordinary property, which would have cost a lot of money. But he had a lot of money, Greg Mance, didn't he?
He did. Now, I think it might have been involved in the recent Ballarat fires last year as well. But he did. I didn't know initially, but I remember one day he must have been looking at my shoes, and the pauper in me must have been obvious. And he said, do you need a new pair of shoes? And I said, yeah, probably. You know, it's like you wear your comfies wherever
I've,
you go.
I've seen you, Dan.
You need
a new pair of shoes, yeah.
Yeah, I think there might have been moccasins back in the... And he goes, do you want a new pair of shoes? And I said, oh, you're probably due for some. He goes, well, what size do you take? And whatever size it was, 10 or whatever. And then he goes, I'll get you some shoes. And It was that day that I found out, that morning, that I found out that he was the proprietor of Windsor Smith, who at that stage was still one of the leading shoe companies in Australia. So, and it was a family business that had been run for many, many years. And he had no problem in getting me a few pairs of shoes. And I didn't know. I'm never the sort of person to ask, but I didn't know.
You do get a lot of contra, though. You don't pay for much, I've got to say, so...
Oh, well, hopefully because I'm respected, Matt. Maybe that's the difference.
But Simone, you'd have loved to have been around at that time with a shoe salesman as your best friend. You could have gone to a lot of fashions on the field with Windsor Smith.
Yeah, I could have. I might have looked pretty ordinary up the top. The you shoes would have looked good, wouldn't
you
they?
You might have made the finals.
No doubt I would have. But what great stories coming out of it again.
The year of that Cox Plate, I mean, Coal Diesel was first emergency and the Phantom was second emergency. And that actually highlights the depth of that year. I'll run through this field. Now, this is a classic field. Almirad, Vaurogue, Our Westminster, Apollo Run, King's High, Vitalik, Horlicks, Empire Rose, Riverina Charm, Zabeel, Procol Harum, who just won the Caulfield Guineas, Stylish Century, Kortzer and Tristana. Now, it really doesn't get any better than that.
That was as good as the 92 field, absolutely. Hey, Simone.
Yes.
Moving on from just the final, Greg Mance. He was a major collector of antiquities, antiques, and lovely old furniture and paintings. He had paintings from famous, and he had two twin properties in Drummond Street, Carlton, which he sold a few years ago, but they were chock full of all these antiques and paintings, and he actually sold them at a major auction in about 2013. So very, very colourful story there. But the Cox Plate is not quite hand-picked, but it's almost hand-picked because it's at the behest of the committee. And I know there's Miracle Miles Dam, which are a bit the same, and there's a handful of greyhound races where you're not guaranteed a start because there is a selection committee, isn't there, with a few of the big greyhound races?
There is, and with these selection races or hand-picked races, you would expect that you're going to get the absolute best of the dogs in Australia at that particular point in time, which is what happens. Of course, there's always controversy. Not a great deal, not enough that I can remember that made headlines and it went on for weeks and weeks, but, you know, there's always that difference of opinion. Someone might rate one dog's run better than another, and so you're always going to get a little bit of not even discrepancy, but you're just going to get that difference of opinion that might end up leaving a dog out. And then there's other years that you've got 8 or 10 genuine chances and you've got to put them into 8 spots. So that's what a panel has to do, try and come up with the
have you ever been on one of those
way.
Panels?
I haven't been on one of those selection panels.
Neil Brown's on a few of them, isn't
yes,
he?
Yes, yeah. He is. I don't know whether it's a job that I would actually... I know they can get quite heated, some of the discussions. And
would you cop a bribe? Would you be bribeable?
No, I would not.
Would you, Dan? Would you cop a bribe?
No.
Notice the pause. No, I was waiting for the Malecki pause. And
I was trying to think of some way that it was doable, but you couldn't in that instance because you'd be too well respected. Look,
isn't that what brown paper bags were invented for, though? Cash bribes?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Well, hey, look, maybe it's good that I'm not on a selection committee then.
No. Well, I think lucky for everyone. otherwise, we'd have 3-year-olds with benchmark 72 paps in every Cox Plate. What you mentioned Ian McEwan earlier, and one thing about Ian and the way that he in particular promoted his Cox Plate was that to have it talked about. It's almost as if any publicity was good publicity. So I think he reveled in the fact that Coal Diesel didn't make it. We just talked about the depth of that field that year. But he reveled in that. And so too did another administrator called Peter Volandis, who was in charge of New South Wales harness racing. And at the time when our Sir Vancelot got left out of the 1996 Miracle Mile for a somewhat restricted class pacer called Manaville, it was mind-boggling. But the amount of press that they got as a result of that was just as good, if not better, than if our Sir Vancelot was actually in the field. 12 months later, our Sir Vancelot came out and won the Miracle Mile, which is quite extraordinary. But we're talking about probably, I think, in the time that I've been around in both codes, and oddly enough, one went from harness racing to thoroughbred racing, the other went from thoroughbred racing to harness racing, but two of the... Two of the leading administrators, I think two that have made the biggest difference for whichever way you want to look at it, were Peter Volandis and Ian McEwan.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing with the greyhounds, you usually get maybe four or five that anyone could pick and you're going to get that right. It sometimes comes down to the last two or three places. It can be that little bit tight, little bit controversial. I remember many years ago, there was a greyhound from Western Australia called Lindale Blue that was not given a chance in the Top Gun and came out and won. And so the people that were saying that dog should never have been in there, that other one should have at the time, you know, the dog's come out and won and run good time. And it was a terrific moment for Colin, I think his name was, the I can't remember his surname, the trainer. And he said the dog should have been in the field, and the dog proved that he could match it with the best on that particular occasion. So there's great stories that come out of it, and I think from week to week you could pick a different field depending on what the dogs are doing.
Absolutely. Well, you know, So You Think was an emergency and got in. Seamus Award got in as emergency. They launched their careers via it. And this year, Natoya, Master of Wine and Grand Slam got in, and I reckon neither should have got in, and neither should Buckhurst, the one that Nick Williams was blowing all about. Just for clarification, I am not suggesting anyone has been bribed in a selection, selection committee. So, guys, today, speaking of the Cox Plate, Dan, this is going to be a good one because you have a long history with Les Theodore, and I'm mates with him as well to a degree, I suppose. And we're going to go right back to the origins of the story of Better Loosen Up, who was a Cox Plate winner. And Les was the man who was up there at Berrigan right at the start of the story, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And Berrigan's pretty close to my heart because I was their regular race caller in the Riverina, and I'd travel up. Obviously, I'd have to be driven up by a family member. But I felt like I was part of Berrigan, and I got to know everyone so well there. But at the time I was there, I probably was happy enough to be a part of two of the greatest racing stories that we've ever had in Campaign King and Better Loosen Up.
Les told me yesterday that you missed a golden opportunity when you were a young man with a full head of hair and a good-looking young rooster. I said, how was Dan then? He goes, oh, all the girls in the stable loved him. I said, really? Was he aware of that? And he goes, I don't think he was. So too young to really sort of take notice of what was going on around him. And Simone, we're going to have a lovely chat to Maddie Craven, who we heard the audio from the emotion of the big win with the beautiful three-year-old trotting filly last week. And that filly's won again, Dan. Remind us, I'll go to Dan. Just remind us of the filly, Dan, and why we're talking to Matt Craven.
Pink Galahs is the name of the filly. So she's got a catchy name to start off with. She's tiny.
Which I just forgot, yeah.
She's a tiny little thing. We were having a chat the other day, Matt and I, and he suggested that she's under 400 kilograms, which is extraordinary. Even height-wise, we were trying to work out the height, and he said that he reckons he could get her into a pony trot race, such as her small stature. But she won the Bill Collins Sprint against the very best, the open class, the top level, Inter-Dominion winners, the Group 1 winners across the board. Three-year-old filly took them on and beat them, and then she came out last week and was absolutely sublime, taking out the Victoria Trotters Oaks. So we can relive that moment and have a chat to Maddie. And look, while the filly is flying and going so well, he's got some little battles with her as well. So we'll find out a bit more with Matt.
Just... You're making me think I'm corrupt here, because as soon as you said you could get into a pony trot race, the first thing I thought was a ring-in. How do we organise it, and what odds could we get about Pink Galahs in a pony trot race? You'd take
that
a
is what I've got to put up with. It gets worse with every red wine he has too, Simone, talking about that sort of stuff. That's why they limit it to, you know, a responsible serving of alcohol, and after two you go home. That's one instance where that responsible serving of alcohol is really important, because you get to hear these sorts of things all the time.
Well, I'm just wondering if you've got a few tricks up your sleeve today, Matt. You seem to be on that bit of a shifty bandwagon this morning, maybe?
Dodgy, slightly.
I think
you've
been dodging on the punt.
Yeah, I'm thinking dodgy
losing
thoughts
on the
this morning.
Punt.
Yeah.
Well, opens the door for
I do have a sort of a knee-trembling bet in the Cox Plate today that I placed a few weeks ago. So, and this involves Probabil, and I'm hoping like hell that that three-year-old who shouldn't be in the race, Grand Slam, doesn't fall in my lap at the 600 and take me out. But other than that, no, not thinking illegal thoughts at all, Simone. Hey, what's been happening in the world of greyhound racing in the last week or so?
Okay, so on Wednesday they had the final of the Great Chase at the Meadows. Of course, we caught up with Fiona Orr last week on the show, who won the Great Chase with Unlawful Entry, the Hurt Community Group riding for the disabled. And this year it was Dr. Tucker for William McMahon who took out the Great Chase. And the community group he was matched with was Wood and Crete from Ararat. So they took home $10,000 and all the other groups received $2,000. So I know that sort of money is hard to come by and will be used very wisely, no doubt, by all those community groups. The Hume Cup heats tonight at the Meadows over the 600 metres, and traditionally that final is held on Melbourne Horse Racing Cup Eve when the RSN Silver Bullet is on the Monday night. Of course, we won't be trackside that night like we are in previous years, but I'm looking forward to those 600 metre heats tonight. They look fantastic. And also the Geelong Cup last night. So lots of pretty good racing happening at the moment.
Absolutely. Guys, we might take our first break on Cracking the Codes on Cox Plate Day. And Dan, when we come back, we're going to come back with your old mate, Les Theodore.
Loving their racing, pacing and chasing. Matt Stewart, Dan Malicki and Simone Fisher. Cracking the Codes.
Corlick making heavy weather of it. They're followed by Better Loosen Up and the Phantom that grabs Stylish Century 400 to go. Can he let out wide? Raced up now to grab the front. Citizen, the challenger, and Better Loosen Up from a mile back. Can he let in front? But here's the Tasmanian champ now. Citizen on the outside. Citizen gets to Can he let in. Here comes Better Loosen Up with a mighty run. Citizen and Better Loosen Up. Better Loosen Up on the outside. Go, he goes better. Better Loosen Up takes the Cox Plate. Wins it a half length. The Citizen the neck away. Third in the race. It's Kenny Ladd and the Phantom out wide. For the...
Wow, one of the greatest horses that Australia has ever produced. And when you go through to the early days of where he come from, it really is quite a story. But a man that was associated with two of the finest thoroughbreds that Australia has ever produced joins us this morning to talk about one with the baldy face. He was the pale face adios of thoroughbred racing, and that being Campaign King and, of course, the great Better Loosen Up. And Les Theodore is the common denominator in both those champions who joins us to reminisce about the great old days. Les, thanks for joining us on Cracking the Codes.
Good morning, boys. How are we?
We're well, and Simone's here as well. Les.
Good morning, Simone.
As soon as Dan just read out that preamble, I thought, when's Les going to write a book about his life? Because it even goes beyond the horses. When are you going to pen the great Les Theodore autobiography, Les?
I actually might one day, Matty.
A lot of chapters.
No, I'll only write the funny story.
Well, they're the only ones we're interested in anyway. So.
Well, I got a bit worried then when Dan was doing the intro when he said the baldy. I thought, he's bust going to say the baldy old bloke that's training.
The only thing is I've got less hair than you have nowadays.
Les, when you hear a replay of Better Loosen Up like that, and obviously you had your... We'll go through your role with him in Campaign King, but... The horse had moved on from your care at that stage. Where did you watch that Cox Plate from, and what was the feeling like knowing that you'd been part of that story?
Well, see, I've always treated horses are horses to me, Matty. It's like property. You buy a property, you do it up, you sell it, you move on. You don't regret that you sold it. You can't, otherwise you're a very small-minded person. It was my decision that I sold him. I sold both horses. You know, I've heard bullshit stories where I got them taken off me and all that sort of thing. But I'm a seller. I'm actually thinking about specking some babies now and getting them ready to sell overseas because, you know, you hold on to some and you have luck and you get rid of others and you have luck because they don't turn out any good. But I watched him. I always loved watching him because he was a great horse, but I certainly never had any down feelings or anything like that.
Les, the Berrigan is the start of it all, and you had a connection there. Obviously, Bert Honeychurch, your father-in-law, a legend in the area. But Berrigan itself, I mean, it's where I cut my teeth, and it's a pretty precious memories for myself, and that's where I got to know you. And the amount of trainers, the quality trainers in that area, where you had Richard Freer, the Freer family, the Sweeney family just up the road as well, you know, from Geraldine to Corowa. Gary Gibb was based there as well. He had that Brummel Who and later involved with Far Rain. And there was strength in stables there. And the Berrigan track, it wasn't an easy track. I mean, I know from a race calling point of view, I couldn't have had a tougher track to cut my teeth on. But the very first tab meeting I ever called, it was New South Wales tab meeting. It wasn't on Victoria at the time. It was in 1984, I reckon it was. And the first two-year-old race of the New South Wales season, for at least a couple of years, was actually Berrigan. If it wasn't just the Riverina, it was the whole of New South Wales. And there was a first starter. This is the big baldy face, and it's not you, Les, and it's not me. And the horse was Campaign King, so I called him winning his first race in a two-year-old at Berrigan. Would have been first week of October 1984. In winning, he broke Biscay's 800-metre Australian record. I mean, it was an extraordinary debut. Do you remember that day fondly?
I remember the first day I met you, mate. I remember a race meeting, but I'll tell you a funny story about Campaign King. I had his half sister, Campaign Queen, and she held the track record. I took her over to Adelaide one day. She held the track record at Morphettville for years. But the Seth Barnes that bred them, he rang me up. He didn't want to keep colts, and I said, "This is a pretty smart horse, Seth." I said, "I'd hang on to this one." He said, "No." So anyway, I got him going, and I tried to lease him originally. No one wanted him, so that's how I ended up with him myself. But as he got going better, Brendan Bryant, BJ Ryan, was one of my stable jockeys, Nick Ryan's dad. And we worked in one morning, and we'd just gone halves in a boat because we weren't far from the Murray River. And being young blokes, a bit of commitment, I said to Brendan, I said, "Jesus, we've got to back this." He said, "Well, I've got no money." And I said, "Well, I haven't got any money." So the boat that we'd bought the week before...
You should have snipped the race caller. He had plenty.
Hey?
You should have snipped the young race caller. He had plenty.
And so we paid $14,000 for it, I think. So we only had it a week. We took it back to the thieving bloke in Yarrawonga, and we said, "Mate, we want to sell this boat. Will you buy it back?" He said, yeah, I'll give you $7,000 for it. So, of course, I blew up, but I copped the $7,000 because we wanted to have it on Campaign King. Because I think it was our very first TAB meeting. Anyway, yeah. He bolted in that day.
What odds was he? What sort of effect did your $7,000 have on the betting pool that day?
Well, it was pretty strong in those days. So, yeah. You know, there'd be probably 15 bookies there, plus it was a TAB meeting. And Dan talking about Gibby, Gary Gibb, they had one in which is a relation of Better Loosen Up, and they really fancied it. And it went to Sydney next start and won in Sydney.
Wow.
So I think we got 4-1 or something like that.
So take us through the transition of Campaign King and then the emergence of Better Loosen Up, because, Dan, you can set the scene for this, because Les said one of the great sentences of all time to you about having a good one but having an even better one, didn't he? Well, take us through that.
He sold his share in Campaign King and whatever amount of money he made, but you went off to Coffs Harbour or somewhere and had some sort of chicken or fish and chip shop, didn't you? You went off the face of the planet for a couple of years.
No, I went to Bendigo first. I was in Bendigo when I had Better Loosen Up. I broke him in at Berrigan because he nearly died. You'd remember, thanks to an old bloke that I had a couple of race horses for, Bobby Knight, the trotting fame. And the vets had give up on him. I rang Bobby. I said, "Jesus, Bob." I said, "I've got a horse. He's a real crook. He got that Ross River fever, which is like encephalitis." And Bobby said, "Well, look, do this, which basically cut it short. He said, "Drip him morning and night and see how he goes." So I did it for 7 days. And, you know, luckily he survived and went on to be what he was. But... What did you say about?
Where did he come from, Better Loosen Up? Was he bred on some farm up that way?
Well, I've always followed bloodline, and I had a horse called Galway Dream, which is out of the same mare. And
Better Fantasy.
Yeah, that's right. And he was real. And we had a Berrigan meeting one Saturday, and there was a Tatura meeting. I had it end at both places because you had to trick the punters up there at that stage. They were pretty smart. So anyway, I accepted it at Berrigan and told everyone I was going to run there, but I took him to Tatura. He won by 10 lengths. Well, that was Better Loosen Up's half-brother. And that day he bowed a tendon, and he went on to race as a 9-year-old. At that stage I thought, Jesus, bloke's good if he can win by 10 with a bowed tendon. So I went out the paddock and had a look at Better Loosen Up. Howard and Jan Martin bred him. And I said to Howard, "How much do you want for that little black colt?" he said, "Oh, well, now that the brother went goes pretty good." He said, $10,000. I thought, "Shit, that's a lot of money for a loosener." So anyway, I bought him. But yeah, we spread at Berrigan by loosening up out of Better Fantasy. And then I had him, and then we, in Bendigo, and I bought a big general store there and ended up sending him up to Bart. We bought off a big plunge with him at Bendigo, and then I sent him to Bart through the Campaign King connection.
Well, just before we go there, Les, we'll just get back to that Bendigo meet. You mentioned Howard Martin. Howard's the one that was responsible for getting me to Berrigan and call. He was the president through that period, of course. I remember calling Better Fantasy. But I hadn't seen you for a while between Campaign King and before Better Loose and Upstart. I saw you at Hamilton in the Hamilton Cup Day in the betting ring at Hamilton. And like long-lost souls, we caught up and... I'd asked how you were going, and you said you'd relocated, and you sort of whispered to me, "I've got a horse," and I'll never forget this because this is quite a line. When you consider what Campaign King had done to that stage, you said to me, "You've got a horse that's better than Campaign King," and you were obviously referring to Better Loosen Up. And for the next 3 weeks, I waited everywhere, looked at every form guide anywhere in Australia, knowing what you were like, Tatura, Berrigan, wherever, to see this horse in, and of course... You've got to the stage where you talked about the plunge at Bendigo when he won his first start. How about we remind you of how he actually won it? I found the audio of Better Loosen Up winning his maiden.
600 to go. Willani nearing the turn, about a neck in front of Tip and Eyes on its inside. Better Loosen Up a length away, third the outside, three then to Emerald Haggard, then Pug's Dancer and Tricked It. In the straight they race, 400 to go, and Better Loosen Up on the outside moved up with Willani. Timp and I's battling on the inside, but Better Loosen Up got a tit in front of Timp and I's. Willani's starting to struggle there, well clear of the others. Better Loosen Up, he's pulled the whip. Timp and I's back on the insides, on turns with him with 100 to go. Timp and I's the inside, and Better Loosen Up stride for stride. It's Timp and I's just in front. Better Loosen Up ducked in, comes at him though. Better Loosen Up put his head in front, and Better Loosen Up gets the money. Scores by nearly a length to Timp and I's, five away third Willani.
A signature type win for Better Loosen Up, although Timp and I's, who he beat, Les, was actually a very good horse, but he sort of fell in from there. Just take us through the story from that point on. So Campaign King's been shuffled up to Bart, I think, by this stage. And what were you thinking of doing with Better Loosen Up after that maiden win?
Well, I never fancied myself as a horse trainer. I always wanted to dabble in... I always wanted to be have a pub. So I bought this general store, and I had a great association with Bart. He really looked after me through Campaign King. And I thought, I'll send him up to Bart. Not long after I sent him up to Bart, it was when that, you know, the fire sale took place.
Yep.
And Anthony took over. And the bloke that was in Better Loosen Up with me, they had him in at Canterbury. And the bloke that does the form now, there was a bookie, Dominic Byrne, was with Anthony Cummings. Anyway, they rang me on the... He was in on the Wednesday. They rang me on the Monday. Anthony said, "Gee, I don't know whether this bloke can win on Wednesday." I said, "Well, if he can't beat them," I said, "put him on the truck and send him back to Bendigo." And then he rang me back and he said, "Oh, look," he said, "we've done the form. We think he'd probably get away with it." And he's backed off the map. And I went down to Darren Beedman. I flew up there and went down to Darren Beedman. I said, "Darren, there'll be a quit there for have a drink if you can win on this." And he said, "All right." So I went down and... I give him a couple of grand after the race. Anthony said to me, "Oh, that's not the way we do it. We do it through the office." I said, "Oh, well, that's the way I do it." So I never left him there long. I brought him back to... I was in Adelaide at that stage. And when he came back to Adelaide, he was short in front. You know, he ran into Canterbury Guineas and all that up there. So I brought him back to Adelaide, and Bill Marmion, who's the vet over here, he x-rayed him, did everything. He said he's got a hairline fracture of the pelvis. I said, "Oh, shit." So anyway, the option was 6 months, maybe not again. And as I said, they're horses to me. I'm a seller, so I sold out of my quarter share for $60,000. And then he went to Hayes, and that's how it all happened.
Les, when you said that you had a horse better than Campaign King and Better Loosen Up proved how good he was, did he exceed the expectation that you had of him at all?
Look, yes, but as I said to you, they don't sort of rule my life. I mean, they're horses and I love them and everything like that, but at that stage it was a factor of if he doesn't come back, there's nothing there. And 60 grand's not bad money. It's like when I sold Campaign King, I got 900,000 for 40% share. Well, people think you're a dill, but now they sell a horse overseas for 900,000. They're a genius.
Back then, that was 5 houses in the middle suburbs of Melbourne. So, hey, Les, what I'm so curious about is a lot of the bush horses are quite slow. Like if you got one that can win a maiden at Corra or Bendigo, it's going to light up the track a bit. It's going to show ability. But so you've got Campaign King and Better Loosen Up, who are sort of galloping along at Bendigo or Berrigan in early training. They must have blown your mind what they could do because of what they went on to do. Like one of them was an all-time champion sprinter and the other one was an all-time champion, yet they were burning up the tracks of Berrigan and Bendigo. Like what were the track watchers thinking at the time when these two horses came along?
There wasn't any track watchers, but like what Dan said, at that stage, the River Arena was full of just great horsemen and trainers. And there'd been plenty of good horses before, like favourites for Melbourne Cups. And
like a Falcon, Richard Freer?
Yeah. Like the Freers, the Honeychurches, the Hoisted, the Sweeneys, they were pretty bloody good trainers. And when you say the expectations, I must have known. I won 13 with Campaign. I won group races with him and everything like that. So it wasn't as though I had him... you know, you win group ones and everything like that. Once you've tasted it, it sort of satisfied me. So when Better Loosen Up had that injury, I thought, oh, shit, well, I'll move him on. So there wasn't any great theory to it. If someone offered me money for him, I sold him.
Les, it's been quite clear through this interview that, yes, you do have the love of the horse, but they are a business proposition as well. But there is a photo when you reunited with Better Loosen Up about 5 years ago. What sort of feeling did you have when you reunited with this terrific racehorse? Did you sort of a little bit of a soft spot come out?
Have you got a soft spot, Les?
I loved it.
Matt, that's a bit rude.
Thanks, Matty. I love Campaign King more. You know, if you're going to say which girlfriend do you like best, I liked him better because I had him a lot longer. I won 13 races with him, including group races. And they were both, you wouldn't believe, had one was a bull, a stallion, and he was as quiet as, you know, horse you'd ever meet. And so was Better Loosen Up. I love them both, but my favourite was Campaign King.
Les, if I had a girlfriend who looked like Campaign King, I'd be trading up. So, as Better Loosen Up's career advanced and he became this megastar and the people used to go to the races just to see him and he represented Australia in the Japan Cup, were you proudly, wherever you were at the time, were you proudly kicking back, taking it all in, knowing that you'd played some role?
Of course you do. It's like your kids. I had them both from yearlings. So, they were both broken in, you know, by me. So, of course you're proud. But the only little bit of dissonance, like I said, and it doesn't really affect me a great deal, I was treated as a business. And the only time when I read stories and hear stories that I lost them both, well, you know, that absolutely gets under my skin a bit.
Well, I've been able to put it straight to this morning anyway, on this day that we reflect on Better Loosen Up winning the Cox Plate in 1990. And I mean, I've known you long enough too, but a two-part question. What did you do with the money? I hope you didn't bet it away. And two, did you buy that boat back?
I bought a better one. I bought a pub.
Yeah.
Where was the pub, Les?
I bought the Bull's Head Hotel in Wangaratta.
How long did you have that and how'd that go?
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. I put a manager in there. I had a lovely holiday home on Lake Mulwala, which is just near Wangaratta. And I thought, I'll go over one Sunday and see what... So I went over and it was my pub at that stage and I'm sitting in the bar and there's three old blokes in there on the Sunday. One worked for the PMG and boarded upstairs and he's down the end of the bar going, and I thought, I don't know whether I'm going to take to this caper very well. So I kept it for a little while longer and got rid of it.
Your little experience on the Sunday didn't fire up your imagination with a splutter down one end.
I had great dreams. Wang was a bit of a holiday place. I was going to put on a lamb on the spit on Sunday, give away free feed, and I'll sell heaps of barrels. I'm a good theory man.
Hey, and you've been a gypsy your whole life, and that's why you're going to write this book one day. And the current chapter has you in Adelaide with your beloved son, Stevie, who made the move over there, and it's been a bit of a tough road in some ways, and good on you for being a good dad. You're over there with your boy, and you're both with Travis Doodle and working over there. Tell us about life at the moment, Les.
Yeah, well, when the borders are open, I go back quite frequently because I've got my two younger kids back at Cranbourne, but I love all my kids, get on very well with them, but you're right, you pick me one. Maddie, I have got a bit of gypsy in me. I'm just a bit sorry all those days of the gypsy camps and that are gone because, you know, who would be there? Les Theodore.
You would. You'd have a little old caravan. You'd have those gloves with no fingers, like sitting around a barrel with a fire in it, and you'd be telling yarns. I can just see it now. You'd be telling everyone about what a dashing young man Dan Malecki was as a child prodigy race caller, and all these lots of stories would come up.
I like those stories.
Yeah. Well, do you know something? I've versified in meeting different people, from politicians to police to everything. I've always found the racing people crowd were the best company and the funniest. Now, you'd always get a good story out of a racing person.
And they're not always honest citizens, but they're always good company, aren't they, Les?
Well, it's not when you have a conversation with a politician either.
Exactly right.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Hey mate, we've run out of time. We could do this forever. We keep thinking we want to take this show on the road and do it as a bit of a gypsy caravan, so I reckon you're just seat 1A for a start. Simone's very keen to take this on the road. We've got quite a few sign-ups as well, so would you like to do the road tour with us? You can bring out your inner gypsy.
I would love that.
All right, Simone, you can organise it.
Okay, well, we just need someone to fund it, and then we'll be right to go.
Don't worry, Les can fund it.
He knows someone.
When he was talking about the pub, I thought maybe that could be our start, but sadly enough, he doesn't have it anymore.
No, he's put off by the splutterer down the end of the public bar, and he sold it. Hey, mate.
Well, I don't think I'd want to do the show with the splutterer at the end of the bar either.
Mate, and thanks for that tip at Narracourt that went down by a short half head during the week. That was a great pleasure for me to be involved in that one. So, good on you, Les. Thanks for coming on board, mate, and
well done with your
role with two of the great horses from your little country base up there at Berwick. And you played a major role in racing history, so well done.
Lovely to talk to the three of you. Good luck.
Leader is I'm Ready Jet. Pink Galaza's coiled up and ready to go. On the outside was Queen of Crime. In the straight, though, it's I'm Ready Jet in front. Pink Galaza goes back to the inside. Queen of Crime runs on, but Pink Galaza, she's doing it easy. This little girl, a little star, she's got cult status. Group 1's 2 weeks in a row and does it easily. It's a brilliant win to Pink Galaza. What a run from Queen of Crime second. I'm Ready Jet third.
And that was the Trotters Oaks from Saturday night. Matt Craven has got Pink Galaza, but he also trained the Quinella, which was a feat in itself. The second horse was actually a pacer turned trotter and runs second in a Group 1 behind an absolute star. Would have been hard to take the smile off this man's face in the last fortnight. Matty Craven, what a ride this little girl's taken you on.
Oh, it sure has been, Dan. It's been unbelievable. You know, we've always seen her perform at a high level, but her last sort of 6 weeks, she's really stepped up.
Such a catchy name. There's a joke that ends in Two Dogs about people being named after the first thing they see when they look out the window. And I know there's a lot of wildlife down your way. Did you look out the window one day and see a couple of Pink Galaza and you thought, that sounds like a good name for a trotting filly?
No, unfortunately. But Caleb's a big fan of Johnny Williamson, and there's a song, Gallery of Pink Galahs, and I think it resonates with a lot of things, from his family, farming and all that sort of stuff. And, yeah, it's a good song to listen to when you're kicking back having a couple of beers, that's for sure.
Matt, initially when you won the Bill Collins 2 weeks ago, I automatically thought, oh, you need to have a beer with your mate Duncan, the koala that we'd spoken about that you had a photo with. But just going back to that Bill Collins, and of course that leads into the Trotters Oaks, that emotion that you showed after the race, it was just so unrehearsed, just so pure. And we're all sitting here last week, and I still sort of get a little bit emotional thinking about it, your reaction. And I know you put a tear in Dan's eye the call that night, and I'm sure there's many men and women that were very teared up after that win. It was absolutely brilliant. Can you just relive that for us a little bit?
I don't want to go back too far. I'll start again.
No, we're not sure, you're a blubbering mess.
You don't have to become a blubbering mess again, but you can just tell us the story.
Yeah. It's, you put so much time and effort and into these horses, and, you're always, with them and through their ups and downs. And probably 6 weeks prior, we had a tiny issue that, we were told, we possibly should finish her campaign and do surgery, and we mightn't see her again. But we couldn't sort of get a guarantee that the surgery would help, or even a guarantee that she'd come back. So we just, believed in our little girl and pressed on, albeit on a little bit of a different training schedule, but it's actually really agreed with her, and she's even stepped up. So it's been an unbelievable ride even from then.
Matty, I've referred to her as being small, and I know if a person was small, you probably wouldn't want to refer to them as small all the time, but she just belies her heart and soul. It's six times bigger than her actual size. How tall do you reckon she is, and how much do you reckon she weighs?
Oh, it should be somewhere in the 13 hand mark. She might be 13.2 or something like that. You'd nearly sneak her into the pony trots if you
We were talking about that earlier. We could get a rort going there, couldn't we, if she snuck into a pony trot?
She wouldn't look out of place, that's for sure. And everyone who sees her in the flesh and visits her at the stables, and you can have her in a lineup here, 10 horses, and you can ask someone new who think they know a lot about horses, and you say, okay, well, which one do you want to buy a share in? And they never pick this little girl, and you wouldn't yourself either. But she's just got the greatest attitude, and just this lovely will to win, and she just loves her work. And even from day dot, she wanted to be there and do it, and she wants to trot. She wants to please you, although sometimes she's pretty hard to deal with. She's a little bit precious at times, but her biggest attribute.
Actually sounds like my horse.
Hey, is she under or over 400 kilos, Matty?
Oh, I'd have to say she's under.
Wow, that's incredible, isn't it?
That's her biggest attribute, is when you do her work, her last heat is always her best one, and it has been since she started, and that's the biggest key to her.
There was some vision in the Trotters final, a head on vision on Saturday night, and you could just see the horse. I think that was yours, I'm Ready Jet, on her outside. She just looked like a Shetland pony compared to him, just the chest size and everything. It's just unbelievable. And I sort of think, Matt, sometimes with a greyhound, if you get a really small one in the litter, you think, oh, I hope they grow, because you just feel that naturally they'd be better with a bit of size. But she's just proved that you don't have to have size. You just need to have heart and stamina, don't you?
Oh, that's for sure. I mean, you'd think as a rule, you want a bigger, stronger, more athletic sort of horse, but there's always an exception to the rule. There's plenty of... I remember when I played footy, there was plenty of big soft blokes out there that didn't do much, so...
Sounds like you must have played footy against me back in the day.
same with the horses, it's just what they've got inside, and you'd love to see how big her heart is, but... she's still got a lot ahead of her, and whether she can continue on doing what she's doing, I don't really know. But what she's done so far, we're just super, super proud of her.
Where's she go to next? Trotters Derby's at Maryborough Sunday week. So is that on the agenda?
Yeah. So she's drawn five in the heat on Sunday, to
to the outside of Elite Stride. So we'll really find out on Sunday where we're at, you know, in terms of how competitive we'll be against him. We've got a lot of respect for this three-year-old crop, and there's not just Elite Stride. There's a hell of a lot of other very, very nice three-year-old sort of boys going around as well as the girls, and she'll have to be every bit as good as what she's been the last few weeks to be competitive, let alone be winning. So,
I'm assuming she's got a small mum or a small dad or small siblings. There's got to be some story there. But what about her action? For listeners who, this is the smallest horse I've ever heard of as a competitor. Has she got a big action? What? How does she get over the ground?
If you watch her when she runs, Matt, you'd never, like, she goes bigger than what she actually is. You know, she's got a lovely sort of springy action, which helps her get over the ground. She's so athletic. And, yeah, she doesn't go like a small horse, basically. If she was a short little stepping thing, she'd probably find it very hard.
It's an extraordinary story. I've called her a lot of times now, Maddie, and you know, I love her. I think she has got cult status, and she's an absolute star. And looking forward to her taking on the boys in the Derby and whatever else comes her way. I love her. I'm sure you do too,
Maddie. We've got to organise a photo with Duncan sitting on Pink Galahs. Can you organise that?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Duncan hasn't called in for a little while. He's around for a while, but he's possibly moved. Found someone with more beer.
Maybe you didn't have the right beer. You needed a Corona, Corona Crownie or something.
Yeah,
like
no,
that.
He only drinks Crownies. He doesn't drink. Matty, you don't understand Duncan, do you? Mate, hey, well done. This is we love these stories. This is a little mouse that roared in Pink Galahs, and she's got a big action and a big heart, but she's only tiny. And you've done a great job, and we look forward to the continuation of her career and further updates from your little zoo down there.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to be on.
Good on you, Matty Craven there, who's got the little freak, the little mouse that roared Pink Galahs. Guys, Cox Plate Day. Dan, you and I are going to get together again from 10 to 12 with Mickey Blue Eyes. And Simone, what's coming up in this? Where are you going to watch the Cox Plate from, the couch?
I haven't actually got around to that. I don't know. I haven't even thought about it, Matt. But
see, Simone's life is so dynamic, Dan. She never knows what's going to happen next.
No, I'll be out letting dogs out or something.
Around what time the Cox Plate's on.
Well, Simone, regardless, you have a great day and good luck with the Greyhounds this week. And look forward to touching base with you and Dan again next Saturday morning from 6 on Cracking the Codes.
Have a great day, guys.
See you guys.
See you guys.